Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we have three in-studio guests, so it's very unusual. Mark Dowling, 20 years of real estate experience in community development. Mark serves as the chief executive officer for the nonprofit Inland Valleys Association of Realtors, known as IVAR. Steve Banos joins us. He's majored in business economics at UCLA, then entered the real estate field in 1996. He became broker-owner in 2001, founder of Prima Vista Realtors, CalTrust Mortgage, and Alyssa Escrow. Steve is currently the elected president of the Inland Valleys Association of Realtors. He also serves as a director for the California Association of Realtors, and in 2011 was director for the National Association of Realtors. And Paul Herrera, government affairs director for IVAR, former reporter covering business in Naples, Florida, and at the Press Enterprise in Riverside, and former communications director at San Bernardino County Economic Development Agency. Gentlemen, we welcome all of you, and I guess there's that statement, may you live in interesting times, and I think real estate has found its way there. The next topic I wanted to cover with this group is the concept of government eminent domain. How would you explain eminent domain to me if I had never heard of the concept?
I would call it the government taking of property, essentially, for a greater public good.
A greater public good. That has to be the motivation. In other words, you won't cooperate with us for the greater public good. We're going to enforce something. But usually that accompanies, I mean, sometimes you're hoping somebody gives you eminent domain and sells you. You have to sell your stuff there, right? Because sometimes it's pretty generous.
It can be very generous, absolutely. I had a property years ago that was sold in the city of San Bernardino that happened to be taken out as a result of Caltrans expansion of the 210.
Yeah.
And that homeowner made a significant amount of money when you factored in what they paid for the property, what Caltrans paid for the property. Caltrans paid for moving expenses and a variety of other things that a normal transaction would never have paid. So in that case, that family made a lot of money versus a standard sale of a house.
Yeah, and I've seen that more often than not where, you know, we're going to expand the freeway, we're going to, you know, expand the road or go under. You see that stuff going on in Riverside where you got, I bet that, you know, that eminent domain probably played a role. But you never, I never felt like, okay, well, the owner of that property just got hosed. It seemed like there was equal protection there. Yes. And I also never thought that eminent domain could be used in anything other than real property. So I look at the headline in the newspaper and all of a sudden see San Bernardino talking about forcing the sale of loans using eminent domain. And I just, and I thought, okay, are they just dreaming this up? Or as a matter of fact, is this a valid concept?
That's a good question. And that's one that we're pretty sure is going to be tested if this program moves forward, is going to be tested by the courts. You know, there's an assumption being made by the proponents of the program that says that government agencies can use eminent domain, and they've stated this, they can use eminent domain to acquire anything, goods, services, you name it, as long as they can show a public purpose for it, and you know it's a required part of their program. And they have to provide fair and just compensation. That's just the Constitution speaking. We don't know because it hasn't been done before.
Okay.
You take essentially an accounts receivable or you know portfolio asset and acquire that. And in this case, say that the public good that's being exercised is not a freeway or a waterway or you know a lighthouse. It's a getting an individual out of debt and saying that by bringing more people out of debt or you know out of their upside down property and making them participants in the marketplace again, that is a public good that's worth using eminent domain in order to help out.
Well, we just kind of discussed that the loss has to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not talking about a little bit of loss because the way they're structuring this offer, and we'll talk about that in a minute, about you know fair market value, it's not really coming up to full market value. And the lender and the inventory they're going after is right, predominantly current. So it's really an interesting thing. They've chosen the cream of the crop to go after. But the whole concept of going after loans, I was wondering if it had ever been done before. So somebody stayed up late at night and went, man, I think this will work.
We could not find a single example of that.
Okay.
No, and even some of the private companies that are proposing this have said on the record in their interviews to the media that they have they view this as untested.
Right.
Yeah, there is no precedent on it from a legal standpoint.
Well, then you can bet that somebody's going to test it, right? They're going to try it, and some lender's going to go, no. Well, how long could that take? I mean, is that going to be a few-month process or a few-year process? That doesn't sound like a little deal.
I actually researched a city ordinance that was done in Oakland in 2001 where they had passed a city ordinance that restricted the amount you could charge on loans that was more restrictive than what was in place at the time. And it went back and forth in the courts. It eventually went to the California Supreme Court and was overturned. But that went from 2001, and it finally got wrapped up in 2005. Okay. And in the meanwhile, Oakland had all the banks stopped lending in Oakland, which goes to something else that we're concerned about with this one. They stopped lending in Oakland in the meanwhile, and Oakland kind of missed out on one of the big market growth residents.
They couldn't get loans in from 01 to 05?
There was a large amount of lenders that wouldn't lend in Oakland, period.
Okay.
Because
I didn't even know that was legal, but I guess I could understand.
I don't think there's any reason why not to go ahead and lend, why you have to lend in a particular place, like a city that has an ordinance, when you can cite the ordinance as being an issue.
Well, and then you bring up a real valid point. We're constantly working on things that are really seem like they'd be really good at the present, but the ramifications after the fact are horrendous.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So what happens to the lending world if this is all successful?
Well, that's a great question, and nobody knows. I mean, we've at Ivar and the board of directors has taken a formal position against the use of eminent domain to condemn mortgages, private mortgages. And we view it very simply. We are a private property rights advocacy organization. And when you condemn the mortgage, you're condemning one of the owners of a house. Most homes are owned by both the homeowner and the deed of trust holder. And when you begin to allow government to pick and choose whose rights they want to trounce and whose they want to protect, that's a very dangerous thing. So from a property rights issue, we're against this. You're right. Relative to lending and how loans are going to work in the future, that is a huge concern. I mean, because this is untested, we just don't know how the market's going to respond and what are the unintended consequences.
We talked a little bit about perverse incentives being created by new government programs. You look at this one, and you have a situation in which we're going to decide that the losses on a home, that responsibility is going to be borne by the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you create a brand new, essentially insurance risk pool, because everybody is going to pick up a tab for a market downturn.
Your co-citizen will pick up 1/1,000,000,000th of it or whatever and put it on their back too.
Meanwhile, the gains, the market upticks, are all going to belong to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So this time around, the banks aren't prepared for this sort of thing. The lenders or the private label security holders that they're talking about, they're not prepared for this sort of thing. But that's going to change pretty quickly. Because if this program is legal in San Marino County, Ontario, and Fontana, there's no reason why it won't expand to Rancho Cucamonga, San Francisco, Dallas, Texas. You'd be foolish as a city, frankly, not to at least explore the idea.
Well, there are some goodies in it for the city. When you read that the ownership, well, let's talk about that. If they do this and they buy a loan in San Bernardino, they're going to be dealing with the current owner. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're trying to basically do a loan mod. And the reason I think they're trying to do a loan mod is their tax base then gets adjusted very differently going forward if you have price increases, correct? You don't revert to Prop 13. That's a very big deal. If your loan does not get paid off and get another buyer, then that 100 grand house in San Bernardino, if it was going to be resold for 100, is under Prop 13, can only go up so much. That's not true if they do a loan mod. It can escalate to 300 grand in 2 years if the market did that. And the tax base would be very positively affected. I could see somebody approaching the city and the city going, wow, look at that. That's the carrot for them, and maybe solving the vacant houses and all that stuff. But yeah, that was a carrot that I saw for the cities. And have you guys had any discussion with any of the cities and said?
None of that has been described.
Okay.
They haven't gone into that level of detail when it comes to the benefits on the government side. And we're still looking for more information to come out on that piece. We've been pushing pretty hard to try to bring more of this out to the public. We feel it's important to have a very public vetting of this kind of program. If the communities of Fontana and Ontario and San Marino County and the folks out there feel that this is the kind of program that they want to support, and knowing everything eyes wide open, knowing that it's going to raise the cost of mortgages in the future, it's going to affect lending patterns, we're all going to pay some kind of premium for a future housing downturn, knowing all of these things and the benefits and who they go to, and they want to move forward, then that's fine. But we should have that discussion, amongst the community, wide open, so we understand the ramifications.
I've been talking to some regular people about this particular program and kind of, and obviously kind of understanding all the background on it.
Mm-hmm.
We're all kind of shocked. We're surprised to even see it. A lot of people are shocked to even see the idea. But the funny thing is, when you talk to the public about it, I don't think they really get past the idea of free money. And so there's a lot of excitement for it, for friends of mine. Now there's other people who understand the idea of good policy making, you know, taking personal responsibility and having some kind of, and they get past the free money thing and go, all right, great, we get free money, but what's the cost and what does it mean to everybody? And after you look at the details, a lot of people start shaking their heads. And, you know, we talked about, can you see people shaking their heads? I'm shaking my head right now on the radio station. Okay. And people go, this probably isn't such a great idea. It could be something that's really, really ugly.
Yeah.
Our concerns, by the way, just to add to that, I had questions about tax liability, legal ramifications. Can the bank that was shorted on this come after me personally because I signed a contract? How quickly can I refinance afterwards? Does it show up on a short sale on my credit report? What are the issues that are involved? And quite frankly, part of the reason that the Board of Realtors is getting involved is so we can get the answer to those questions so we can provide consumers that information. We don't know.
Well, this is a very big attempt to basically buy a loan pool one at a time with a very big margin per loan. Because the idea is, okay, well, here, we're going to determine market value for your loan separate from the sale of the house at market value. So what you have is a crummy loan that's way over encumbered, and there's a pool of $1 billion of loans that have proven that gets X amount of percent of value, even though they're buying that loan one. So that's the price for your loan, and then there's a big margin between that and the market value, and then they're going to sit down with the homeowner when they have this, and they would be the great person to sit down with. They have a profit incentive for years, right? I mean, it's just like, can we get a 30-year loan out of this? This would be great. Okay, and the city has the incentive because they get the rising tax bill. And all of a sudden, you just think, man, this seems like some scheme that's like somebody dreamed up. It's just like, I think we can pull this off.
Yeah. Well, look, they've touted this as an economic development policy, one that will not only help homeowners and consumers, but one that they believe will create a whole new market of move-up buyers. When we have all these thousands of people that are now not over-encumbered on their property, they could potentially buy a bigger house or at least have that kind of flexibility. I suppose there's theoretically some truth to that if it ever gets exercised that way. But, I mean, if they're doing it merely to as an economic development policy, I mean, why don't they start condemning car loans? Why don't they start condemning credit card debt? I mean, those are all debts and liabilities that consumers and citizens have. And, you know, where are they going to draw the line? Why should they pick and choose homes as opposed to car loans as opposed to credit card debt? It's a real problem.
Yeah, you open Pandora's box. Why they chose the type of loan that they chose? Okay, it's predominantly going to be a current loan that's over encumbered. Why is that their choice?
Well, there's two things they've targeted. One are performing loans. So people that are behind in payments or an NOD is filed, they would not be eligible. The reason why is the whole point of the condemnation of the loan is so that the person can then refinance with a Fannie Freddie product. And if obviously you're behind in payments, you're not going to be eligible for that. So that's why they want to be current. The second issue is they finally disclosed that they're only going to target private label mortgage-backed securities. So none of the Fannie, Freddie, GSE stuff. So they're going to be going after private label loans. The bulk of those, I would imagine, are going to be jumbo loans. I mean, if you look at North Fontana, for example, most of the loans, and I live in North Fontana, in my neighborhood, probably exceed $417,000. They're not strange loans. They're not weird loans. They're not destructive, cancerous loans that are hurting the housing market. Those are normal, good loans that were needed for higher-end housing.
Sure.
Those all fall under the private label. Those would all fall within this program.
Okay. But the let's say if the value was up there in 2006, it probably certainly isn't. It's in the conventional loan range now. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe I misunderstood. I thought it was these guys' intention to buy the loan and then recast the loan and still own the loan themselves. You're saying that they just want to get refied out, basically, and the loan, they'll buy a loan and then have a loan product replace them and they get a payday. Is that
correct?
That's your thought?
Yes, as I understand it and has been described by a variety of people, that's how they'll do it.
Okay, either A or B would work, but that kind of explains the margin.
Don't feel bad because the details have keep changing as the time goes on, so it's hard to follow the bouncing ball for us sometimes too.
But either way, the goal is for the owner to stay there and get a new loan product and get to now have a break-even point. See, that's what's interesting. How do you – in the process, they try to explain why – There's a fair market value. They even explain fair market value, which I thought was really interesting. And then it comes under the title of eminent domain. I think, okay, the price that a willing buyer would pay a willing seller under neither any and neither under any compulsion to transact. And I thought, how do you put that definition in with eminent domain? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a little misstated. That's not the definition of market value, especially when you say, okay, we couldn't possibly pay you fair market value for the home. In other words, that can't be the price of your loan because you have a distressed product even though it's not late. So there's going to be a much lower figure for the loan paid, creating the margin that they can make a profit and do all this.
Absolutely.
And you just think, this is, you know, this is actually going to be attempted. You know, that's the part that makes you shake your head and go, you know, how close are we to this, by the way? Are we going to have that challenge pretty soon where somebody says, hey, we're taking over your loan?
It's looking like something that they've talked about starting it before the end of the year. And they've pegged it to some of the expiring tax forgiveness that exists with debt forgiveness on mortgages.
Well, that was the other thought, because I know that they were talking about buying the seconds and stuff. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they lose the recourse.
No. Exactly.
So this could be – here's a good question. What's the background of Mortgage Resolution Partners? Were they doing loans in 2005?
Some of their principals were involved in the mortgage market. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who would know better what kind of mess is available to buy? That's amazing. Well, that's the same thing with the big pools of money buying properties right now. If you look at the background there, they were in the loan business at that point. Mm-hmm. And now real estate seems to be of interest for other reasons. So right now, no one is actually doing this anywhere in the country. So this is California is a test case.
Mm-hmm. This JPA, which has been approved by the County of San Bernardino and the cities of Ontario and Fontana, is a separate legal government entity that exists as of last week when they all voted on it. So it is up and running. They have not yet had their first meeting. They have not yet disclosed their business plan. That will come out, they've said, within the first 90 days. So presumably within the next 90 days, we'll have a clearer idea relative to the scope and scale and what they're going to include in their effort.
When the eminent domain is successful, let's use that term, does the city own the loan?
The JPA will own the loan. Now, one thing we do not know at this time.
What does that stand for, by the way?
I'm sorry, the Joint Powers Authority.
Okay.
Simply an arrangement between multiple government agencies. In this case, the County of San Bernardino, City of Ontario, and the City of Fontana.
Okay.
So at that point, the Joint Powers Authority will own the loan under some kind of agreement with a third party, which, according to media reports, will be Mortgage Resolution Partners. On some scale and on some level. We don't know exact details. We don't know whether the JPA will directly hold it or whether they'll only be the vehicle to acquire it, and then it'll come through to some third-party group of investors. A lot of that kind of remains to be seen, and we're looking for those details to emerge so that we have a better understanding of what it is and who benefits.
I guess it could be multiple solutions. I mean, if I own paper now, and in essence, not a city but a joint group of cities owns the note, that's still got all the original terms. They just bought it at a discount.
That's right. Correct.
Okay. So a sit down with the owners and, recasting the loan or whatever, all those options might be available. So you might have all of the above going on. They might, in fact, hold some paper. They may, in fact, just say you can get a refi and pay us off. All those things could be in play.
The homeowner may decide not to or may have some problem that's underlying that you can't find on a credit report. And not qualify to refinance at that time. So you could end up having the county holding a lot of paper.
Or foreclosing, which is going to be an interesting dilemma.
Yeah, what's to say that they won't have to foreclose on somebody?
Oh, they promise not to. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely have liens pop up that you didn't know were there, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. What about, we just went through a nightmare of MERS and robo-signing. They're going to get their share of that stuff. Right? I mean, I would think.
The county and the cities are suddenly launching into the mortgage business, an area where they don't have staff, they don't have expertise. So presumably they're going to have to contract that out and work with, some partners in the industry. Now, who are those partners and what kind of, background do they bring to the process? Those are all things that we assume will come through in the next 60 to 90 days. But again, this JPA is now authorized and ready to start taking action. It does not require any further authorization from any of the members, not the city of Fontana, Ontario, or the county. None of those boards or city councils have any further say in whether this thing moves forward, with one exception. That is, they have 90 days to opt out of the contract. If they don't do that, then they really have no further say in the program and how this thing moves forward.
What's interesting is I was just on a panel at the Riverside Foreclosure Task Force, and none of this was mentioned. So this wasn't known 2 weeks ago to them, because actually that was one of the things that was suggested by somebody in the room was, how do we use the city powers to force the lenders to take principal reductions? And I countered that as, you know, just saying that you might not want you might not want to live with the unintended consequences of having the power to do that. And then here, you know, 2 weeks later, I'm reading in the paper somebody's actually doing it. So I'm wondering, what do you think these other cities are just going, like, watching this going, oh, yeah, what if this works?
Well, I think, and I've talked to a number of cities that are not part of this JPA, and some of them have said very clearly that they're intrigued or interested by this, but they're certainly not willing to go all in at this point. One city manager I spoke to said, excuse me, that he likes to be on the leading edge, but not the bleeding edge. And so, but if this is successful, I would imagine every city would almost have to create a similar system. In the event of a housing downturn, they would have this type of an option available to them. I mean, it's one of those situations where even if they didn't use it right away, they could just shelve this JPA, maintain that legal authority, and at the appropriate time, dust it off during a downturn market, and then go after these notes.
Made great business sense, too, might I add.
I mean, that's pretty scary stuff. How is this different than a cram down? I mean, the thing we were all afraid in a bankruptcy court is now alive and well by eminent domain.
It's the same. I mean, the only unique aspect of this idea is that they're using eminent domain. I mean, the role of the JPA from a government standpoint is beyond minimal, excluding the legal recourse of eminent domain. Outside of that, that JPA doesn't have any employees or any expertise to do what it's trying to do. Mm-hmm. That would all be through third-party contracts with outside professional companies.
It's a decentralized nationalization of mortgage debt, which is funny. You're using local government to go ahead and do what a lot of banks, a lot of people would have liked to have seen with the
But it mortgage. Seems like they have more authority to do it. At least that's what they think.
All day long.
Yes. And that's been kind of the some of the proponents have said that this is a local problem. Housing is about as local as you're going to get. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a local solution. And the idea of using eminent domain to solve this problem, as they've described it, is their recourse.
So the greater public good would be we would have everybody that they dealt with, and I don't know what percentage they're talking about. In other words, so you go ahead and do this, and you get all of the people you deal with back at par, okay? Have you affected the market 50% or 5%?
Great question.
It would be... Well, here's the numbers that they've used. They're estimating there's 150,000 mortgages in San Bernardino County that are negative equity. They're underwater. They estimate that 20% of those fall into the private label category. So you're looking at roughly 30,000 countywide. Now, this program right now only includes unincorporated areas of the county and the cities of Ontario and Fontana. So what percentage of that is a countywide? Not exactly sure.
Mm-hmm. About a fourth.
Maybe 25% of that. 30,000. So you're looking at maybe 7,500 total would be the max number. Out of the 7,500, though, again, the people have to qualify. They have to have the debt-to-income ratios, the credit, and so on and so forth. So,
yeah, it's just a loan mod program with somebody getting a very low-cost basis and a running start.
Yes.
At one heck of a profit for them. And you don't – it's interesting. You're trying to assume the intent is good to help the person in the house, but usually the lenders are built – as a profit motive, right? So it's very much, okay, well, sorry, see you later. And, you know, sell the property and make money and see you later. I don't know. I just scratched my head when I read it, and I thought this will be an interesting topic to discuss because it is the reality of our marketplace that 40% of Riverside's upside down. So, you know, that you could see where it would help to get some of those people non-upside down. But I guess traditionally foreclosing might be one of the concepts that would implement at least some. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate your time and discussing some of these things that are affecting our industry.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.